This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for a limited time while supplies last.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to the Antler Up podcast. This episode is brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we have a fun show for you all today. Special guest John Landwehr coming out of Kansas. Had him on the podcast over the summer. Really, really enjoyed that episode that we did with him. And this one, you know, with John, you're chasing, he's chasing big bucks, and we're going to hear about some big buck stories. We're going to really get a chance to hear about some of the challenges that he's going to be facing this upcoming year, losing some private ground that he had access to when it comes to farms and locating some of these big, big bucks that he's hunted over the last couple of years, over 200-inch bucks. But he's learning to be a little bit more adaptable and exploring these new locations and just maximizing his hunting opportunities for him, not only himself, but for friends and his son. It's really a fun conversation that you hear and what he keys in on. But also we talked about like deer movement, weather conditions, filming our hunts, anything along those lines. John's just a great person who just is so passionate about this and just a fun guy to talk whitetail with. And one of those guys that when you know you bring up hunting, you bring up whitetails, the guy can go, and I love that about him. So, John, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode. A couple things are going to be happening, man. The month of May, we have some really cool, fun things going on. I'll be shooting in the RBD this year, so I'll be going to that first leg, the 10th weekend, I think it is, the 10th, 11th, or 12th. One of those days, I'll be heading out there. Then the following week, we have Montage Mountain happening. Jim, Tim, Tom, myself, our good friend Josh. I know Dan Smeltz was on the podcast recently. We'll be going. Taylor is going to be there. Our buddy Taylor is going to be there as well. So really looking forward to catching up with people that day at Montage Mountain. If you are going to be there, hit us up on Instagram, because as of right now, we're planning on doing some form of tailgate. So if you're interested and want to stop by, say hello, please stop by and do that, or message us so we could kind of just get a head count so we know how much food to bring and all that type of stuff. But also two things regarding some of our partners for the podcast, and that's Tethered. Number one, they have released on their website, if you go to tetherednation.com, check out the Tethered swag. If you wanted one of those shirts from the American Outdoor Show that you've seen maybe some people wearing online or whatever, or some buddies, you have a chance to go ahead and get those now. So check out tetherednation.com. Check out the three new designs. Also, special code coming from America's Best Bowstrings until May 12th. And that is a 20% off discount code to America's Best Bowstrings, code AU20. That will save you 20%. I'm telling you, these new Launch Series strings are awesome, but also it's going to work on their Premium Ultra. It's also going to work on their Force. So it doesn't matter what series of bowstrings. If you need a set for hunting season, if you know you're going to shoot your bow a lot this summer, I can't encourage you enough to get out there and buy a set now so that way you're good to go for next hunting season. Or if you have a target bow or a younger whatever, you want to get your child a new set, check them out. And these Launch Series are awesome because they have that new special fiber that they're using, a 452 XE fiber that is really going to set a standard when it comes to durability. Again, already fully pre-stretched, made with that exclusive fiber. And you got, again, just a 2-year warranty against peep rotation, serving separation, and stretch. So check them out over at americasbestbowstrings.com. Enjoy this fun episode with John. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next week on next week's episode, Antler Up. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. I'm joined by a special guest. I got Mr. Kansas himself from Legacy Pursuit. I got John Landwehr on the show. John, dude, it's a great pleasure to welcome you back because we talked, was it last summer? When we did that
like
early fall last summer and everything like that, which was a great fun episode. Man, it's always really cool to speak with individuals that is like a 180 from everything that I've ever been used to for when it comes to hunting and talking whitetails and all that type of stuff. So good person.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm pumped to have you back on the show, man. So thank you for doing that. Quickly, dude, what is going on in your current state of affair right now? What's some current happenings going on for you, dude?
Well, right now it's just kind of trying to plan for this coming season. I ended up switching jobs, so I don't work for a farmer anymore. So a lot of my properties I kind of lost this year. So it's kind of almost not back to the, it's not a blank slate. I still have some places, but it's going to take a lot of work this year to find some of these big deer again. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it's all part of it. That's why we love it, is the chase of it. You know, I mean, I was talking to Austin Stone from Tactical Approach just yesterday about it. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of bummed that I lost all these places. There were some really good places. But he was like, yeah, but that's the fun of it, though. Having to go out there and just start all over and seek another giant. That's great. So I'm kind of really excited for it. But it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of scouting this year. I do still have my one place that has the food plot and stuff, so that's gonna be good. I'll still have some history with some of those bucks, so I think it's gonna be good. And I'm planning on hopefully getting on some turkeys this spring. Hopefully me and Blake can go get on some turkeys. And I know that, you know, Tyler and Angel will be on the turkeys because that's their bread and butter, man. They'll love it.
Yeah. That's cool, man. So, like, losing those couple properties, like you said, and, I mean, you could look at it like, man, you could sulk, which you might have done maybe a day or two or something like that. Kind of head was spinning, like, okay, well, where am I going to hunt? Where, you know, how could you hook up Blake with another great opportunity, which is your son, and along those lines? But then, obviously, for yourself, because the one aspect that I've watched you do the last couple of months and the past year and a half that we've got a chance to know each other a little bit is I think it's cool how you like bringing some of your friends in. Obviously Angelo bringing Tyler in and Tyler's dad, which is fantastic. I think that's great, building that deer camp mentality and along those lines. With that, dude, like how you said you talked to Austin, great, which is great, dude. I loved having him on. I got to get him back on the podcast as well. So when you look at this, John, now that you talked to him last night, what was your today? You were probably, the gears were probably turning in the head a little bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And especially because he went and he found a really big shed antler and you know, it's a monster. And he's like, oh man, I can't wait for this next year to get on this deer. And that really got the wheels turning. Like, all right, I got to get my butt to work and I got to figure something out now. Like, it kind of actually fired me back up a little bit. you know, kind of having that conversation with him. And it's time to put in the work. It starts now. You know, we always preach that on the page and stuff. It's like, you know, whatever you want your season to be, you have to start working from the day season ends till the day it opens. You've got to work your tail off, you know, if you want your opportunity. Some guys get lucky, you know. What's his name? Dustin, you know, Dustin Huff. He got lucky, you know, he's just in the right place, right time. You know, I think the guy lives right. So I think, you know, it's just kind of his time and it tend to happen to a better person. But, you know, it's all about the work you put into, the passion that you have for it. And I believe that no matter how bad everything goes, eventually you'll be rewarded for it. You just got to keep after it. You got to keep grinding, man.
Yeah, it's definitely really fascinating to see all the different walks of life. And I talked about it with Justin Sine the other day, where we were talking about how everybody has like their own story. Everybody has their own path and philosophies and goals along those lines. It's so neat to have this platform where I could talk to individuals that are 365. Like, obviously up here it's 365, right? But like to actually go out and do things, it's a lot more difficult with family and work and all that stuff. But I'll tell you what, I think it's so cool to hear how people that every Saturday they're out there, right? Or any chance they can get, they're out there. Then there's other people that are like, I don't do really much postseason scouting. Like, when the season rolls around, I have those individuals either have a good amount of time where they're able to hunt and go see what's happening, reading the painting, the picture of what's going on in front of them at that moment. Because, man, it is tough. Like, you could put a lot of eggs in a basket of like, I'm scouting here, I'm going here, I'm going here. And then all of a sudden when the season rolls around, it's a total crapshoot. You're like, dang, I put a lot of time in here and it's exactly not what I was hoping for. So those things could sometimes come around, bite you in the butt a little bit. And, you know, with me in my situation right now with the baby, I'll be honest, we're sitting here on an evening here in March, and I haven't gone out that much, man, and which is okay. Like, I know I've said it on the podcast a couple times that right now is usually when I was picking things up last year, but I got this weekend, I got the okay. I'm going out Saturday morning, crack of dawn. As soon as it hits, I'm out there. Maybe I'll even hear some turkeys firing off the roosts or something like that. But I'm going to spend a full day out there, put some boots on the ground, and continuously build on that here. And obviously, once turkey season rolls around, maybe I could get out more. But hey, whatever you could do and maximize your time out there while you're doing it, that's the key. And that's the importance of, too, I think, whether you're hunting properties like you like to hunt, John, or mountains or the hills, I think it's key to map something out prior to kind of roughly go off of. Doesn't mean that you have to stay true to it, right? Well, if you're reading sign and doing different things, but I think that's important, especially if you are really fixed on a certain time frame. Like, hey, I only got a 3.5 hour window. I got to get there and then get going and then come back, basically. So I think those are little things that really have helped out over the last couple years for me.
Oh, absolutely, man. And you know, it's that's the great thing about turkey season is too, is that when you're out there turkey hunting, you can be looking for old signs, stuff like that. And one thing that I never really paid attention to, I think it took Tyler and Angelo, really keying in on scrapes year round. You know, we were out shed hunting, I think last week, a couple of weeks ago, there was two giant scrapes that were still opened up. I mean, it was like they were still using them. And I said, what the heck? And Tyler said, yeah, you got to think about them. That's how deer communicate. They may not hit them as much, but they're still talking to each other through those scrapes. He's like, that's Facebook for deer, basically, is what it is. You know, what's going on with whoever, you know, whatever deer, like, hey, Jimmy, you know, what's going on? You know, he's over there in the scrape and he's kind of letting you know, I guess. So that's some really key factors there. The other thing is too, I'll scout hard, you know, all spring and summer. I'm still looking for where these deer might be. But a lot of things, and I think some people face this too across the whole country, is crop rotations. So like when you might have a deer all summer long, but as soon as that Milo gets ripe, they all move and go to that Milo field. So what I've kind of learned over the last few years is, okay, where are the Milo fields going to be located? Where are these farmers going to have all these Milo fields? And almost kind of hone in on those from the get-go. All right, where is the closest deer sign to these Milo fields? Let's start there. Or, you know, the deer might be in a totally different place, but I know that whenever this field's Milo or whatever, that's where the deer go. So I'm going to beat them to the punch in a week or 2 weeks before I know they're going to move in. I start hanging cameras. I start putting feet out, whatever it may be. So that way, when they make that move, I'm not in there putting my scent around, bugging everything up. If I know those deer are going to be there, I'm going to make my move before they ever know that I'm there. So that way, as soon as this season opens up, hell, you're ready to go.
Yeah. How was this past year for you? I know, like, talking to you prior, like, you were going to be traveling a little bit or doing on some different types of hunts. How many different hunts did you go on this past year as far as whitetail is concerned?
So I just hunted my home state this year, Kansas, and then Angela and I did go to Texas in December, which was super fun. It was a great learning experience. You know, we hit public land pretty hard. Rumor had it there was a giant 200 some inch on some of the public that we were going to go hunt. So it was like, in your mind, it's like, all right, cool, you know. but where we went, it was like 400 acres of really dense, not what you really think of Texas, because it's North Texas. It's right on the Oklahoma border. So it was really dense. There's a lot of oak flats. And a guy that we know down there said that this year is really weird because they had a heck of an acorn crop. So there was acorns all over the ground everywhere. So it's like, okay. So, you know, it's legal to bait deer in Texas. So if you're to put feed out or whatever, good luck. Cause they have a food source. I mean, just everywhere. So it's kind of like we had to really just get there and do our work, you know, hung stands and stuff. And I think it was on Tuesday night, Angel had an encounter with the buck that I ended up shooting in the tail. So story behind that. If you would have taken two more steps, Angela could have, I mean, just throttled him at like 25, 30 yards. But the doe underneath him kind of got a little jumpy. So he actually turned and walked the other way, just didn't give him a shot. And so we knew there was a big one in there. And we got pictures of him on the camera that night. So it's like, okay, he's there. He's staying around. And so he hunted him pretty hard with no luck. And then finally, I can't remember if it was the last night or the night before, we honed in on him, got stands hung up. I'm like, he's coming out here. So Angela was on this side of him and I was on the other side. Well, there were some does underneath me. He ended up coming towards me. And at 40 yards, I shot him in the tail. So that was a punch to the gut. It was I shot a hog that morning. And everything was good. You know, I shot it at hog at like 15 yards. Everything was butter. Everything was ready to go. So I didn't think anything of it. Got to the stand and I shot and it was like 2 feet to the right. And I'm like, what in the world? You know, I was aiming right behind the shoulder, but I hit him in the tail. I literally took, you know, a hair off of his tail. I'm like, what in the world? So we go shoot my bow the next morning and it's like 20 yards. It's like a foot and a half or like a foot to the right. So it was something got bumped or whatever. And he got knocked off in between when I shot that hog at like 11 o'clock in the morning till that night. Wow. Something got screwed up. And otherwise, I mean, up and down, I was perfect. Everything was good. It's just my sight got knocked off and it's just the way it goes.
Dang, dude. That's tough. What, how about when everybody came into Kansas and hunted with you there with Tyler and Tyler's dad along those lines? How did that kind of unfold?
That was definitely my favorite hunt of the year to have everybody here in camp and just to share the experience with them. I haven't had a whole lot of experience or a whole lot of luck rattling, you know, even here. It's just, you have to hit it at like the right time. And when Tyler got here and we got going, we hit it perfect because every day we'd rattle in three or four different bucks, you know, nothing real big for the most part. One buck was a really old buck, but he was really just kind of busted up. Wasn't worth Tyler wrapping his tag on, but it was really fun to be able to have that experience. And I spent a lot of time with Tyler. His dad kind of went to hunt on his own, but it was just so much fun. And I can't remember what day it was. That was like the middle of Tyler's hunt. We actually ended up rattling in a 200 inch deer that I was hunting. We rattled him in, but he came downwind and caught our wind and bolted out of there. And Tyler's like, what was that? I was like, dude, that was him. He's like, oh my God, you're kidding me. So, and then Angelo came in. He got here really early in the morning and he ended up shooting his buck that evening. So he sat in the stand all day, ended up shooting that really nice 8-pointer. And probably the coolest one which I wanted Tyler's dad to get on a big one so bad. I had like a 160-inch 8-pointer that I had him hunting, but he was, you know, nocturnal. He was only showing up at night. And so we moved him around quite a bit. He had some really good opportunities. He just didn't, you know, he missed a couple of times, which he's in Kansas. He's like, oh my gosh, these deer are so huge. And it gets him rattled, you know. And the coolest one was on the last night of their hunt. Tyler's dad was sitting in the tree stand, and he had been watching the couple nights before that of how these deer were moving into there, you know, what path they took and everything. And he's sitting in the stand, and it's like 45 minutes before dark, and an oil pumper, like the guys that checked the oil wells, stopped at his truck and like honked the horn because he was parked on the lease road, and like left a note on his truck. And his dad was like, oh, I just better get out of here. So he packed up his stuff, got to the truck. You know, the guy left a note like, hey, you can't park on the lease road. You know, you have to park off the road. And Tyler's dad was sitting there, and he's like, you know, this is my last night in Kansas. I know where these deer move. I'm going to grab my bow, and I'm just going to go sit over here. So he literally sat behind like a couple of tumbleweeds that he had moved. And he said he wasn't there for 2 minutes, and here come deer flowing right towards him. Bunch of does walked in front of him, and the buck he ended up shooting. He said he saw the antlers come over the hill, and he watched him walk to him. He was coming, and he got ready. And as soon as this deer turned onto this lease road and started walking down it, he throttled him at like 15 yards. The deer runs towards his pickup and dies out in the wheat field. He like ran towards his pickup and died. And I was like, man, I tell you what, you worked for that one. But the hats off to him that he didn't give up. You know, he was like, I'm just till the last minute, I'm going to give everything I got. And I'm super glad he did. He ended up killing a really old buck. So
that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I said, that's definitely probably my favorite hunt this year was, well, Blake's hunt was pretty special, but being able to share camp with everybody was really, really cool.
Yeah. That's so cool, dude. How did Blake's season roll out for him this year?
Well, it was pretty tough in the beginning. You know, we had some really good bucks on camera, definite shooters. But of course, as it always does in September, it turned hot. So nothing really wanted to move daylight. It was pretty rough, but we stuck it out, and he's dead set on shooting one with his bow. I mean, that's just where he's always been with a crossbow for now, but with the crossbow, that's what he wants to use. He wants to shoot one with the rec broadhead, send an arrow through it. But it was the last weekend, we had a cold front coming in. And I said, you know, this is your last day. They say, yeah, it was the last day of season. I know you don't want to shoot one with the gun, but it's the only way we can get it done in one of these milo fields where I know that these deer are at. And he's like, no, I don't want to shoot one with the gun. I said, Blake, like, let's go. Like, let's go give it a shot. Like, come on. This is your last chance here for the youth season at least. And he finally gave in. I was like, let's go shoot the gun. Let's leave early. Let's go shoot the gun, make sure it's on. So we did. And we're out driving around. And it was like almost 80 degrees that day. And it dropped to like 55. Like, it plummeted. And I said, it's going to happen. It's going to bust loose tonight. And so we're driving by this milo field. And I stop and I'm glassing, and this buck stands up. And I mean, of course, looking away from you, he looks huge, but it's just huge deer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Blake, there's like a 180. I think I remember saying 180. I was like, he's a giant. He's a 6x6. He's huge. Wind was in our face. He's looking the other way. He's like 600 yards out there. And this is one of the milo fields that we farmed. So I had permission. I said, dude, everything's just lining up perfect. I looked at him and I said, we can make this work. We can take our time and we can kill this deer. So we get all packed up and I can see the rain moving in. So I left the camera, didn't take it because I don't have a rain cover for it or nothing. I'm like, I don't care. At this point, I don't care. We're going to go kill this deer. If whether or not we get it off film, I really don't care at this point. So we make the stalk out there. I know he's behind one of these terraces. That's where I last saw him. I kind of marked it on my Onyx of where I thought he was bedded. So we walk out there, the wind's in our face, you know, it's covering up our sound and our scent really good. So he gets about 150 yards from where I think the deer's at. I got him on the tripod, got everything all set up. And I was like, okay. So we sat there for a little bit, about 10 minutes goes by, nothing. Then stand up. I was like, gosh, is he really there? Then you start to question. He's like, is that where I saw him, or was he up over the next one, or what was it? And so I'm like, all right, let's make this dude stand up. So I whistled a couple of times, nothing. Dang it. Coughed a couple of times, nothing. Sat there for a minute. I'm like, all right. So I yelled out, hey, deer. And a doe stands up like 50 yards from us. And I'm like, oh, great. This is over. So she stands up. She's looking around, but she doesn't see us, thank goodness. And I'm glassing, and there he is. He finally stood up out of his bed. And he's about 150 yards. So I get Wick on him. But Blake's, you know, here on me. I can barely see over the Milo because it's, you know, right here at my chin. So I can barely see over the Milo. And I'm like, this, dang it. But he's like, it's too tall. I can't see him. I was like, shit. So I was like, all right, well, let's just wait. Comes to the top of the terrace. He has a window. And I said, all right, take him right there. I'll stop him. I stop him. He shoots. You could, boom, and you can hear a ricochet off of a Milo head. With that 243, and you can hear the bullet go zinging off, and he runs towards us, stops again. I said, there he is. You got a shot? He's like, yeah, I think so. Shoots, ricochets off that Milo head. He runs closer to us. I was like, no freaking way. Where he was at, kind of down on this little bowl, almost like a ravine, he thought the shots were coming from the other way. He runs to us, and I range him, and he's 60 yards. And I'm like, okay, can you see him? Can you see him? He's like, no. God. Well, he starts walking. So the Milo rows are running straight north and south, and they're 30-inch rows. So you got 30 inches in between the rows. And the deer starts walking to the left. I said, no way. This deer, no, he's not. I said, Blake, get ready. Just point your gun down the Milo row right here in front of us. He's going to walk right into your shooting lane, and I'll stop him, you pop him. He gets one row away from us, and I go, Brant. And he literally takes one step into the same row that we're in. He no more puts his foot down, and Blake pulls the trigger and just leveled him right there. 60 yards, just dropped him dead in his tracks. And of course, then I just lost my marbles. So it was pretty cool the way it happened. I told him, I said, that deer was meant to be yours. Everything happened, you know, the two misses and everything. One shell left in the gun. It was meant to be.
Yeah. And he didn't want to go. And look at the memory he made. Yeah. Like, regardless of the deer size, man, like, just going out there, the two misses, getting down, going, getting closer, having the deer run. Like, that's a really cool, really cool hunt to remember that by.
Yeah. And then, of course, as soon as he makes a shot, the deer goes down. It starts to just downpour on us. I mean, it's just letting loose. And I was like, oh. So we go up to the deer. We take a few pictures and stuff like that. And I put my blaze orange vest on the deer horn so I would make sure we could find it. Go back to the, we don't get back to the truck, and I have like an inch of water in my boots. It's like, this sucks. So I was like, all right, we'll just grab a couple of ratchet straps. You know, I've been hitting the gym, you know, I can drag this sucker out. Yeah, I got him. I got two ratchet straps wrapped around his antlers, put them around my arms. I make it about 10 feet and I'm going to die. I was like, no, I am not even gutted. This thing's body was so big. I was like, no, I'm not getting this deer out. So I call up my boss and I was like, hey, can I just drive out in the Milo field, just make one path and go load this deer? Oh, yeah. Thankfully, he was like six beers deep already. So he's like, oh, yeah, go ahead. It'll be fine. I was like, sweet. So I drive out to this deer. I go to load this thing. Of course, my truck's got a 6-inch lift on it and everything. I'm like, oh, I can get this deer in there. I've done it before. Nope, wasn't happening. Blake was trying to push on his butt and everything, get him in the truck. I couldn't do it. I was like, oh my God, I'm gassed at this point. So I have to call my buddy, Steve. He drives out there, and him and his boy helped me get the deer loaded up finally, because I was done. But it was quite the night. It usually is. It's usually quite the adventure with us every time. So.
That's good stuff, man. What played out for you this year? Did you have one that I know you said there was that one that you're after, and what ended up in transpiring for you, dude?
So there ended up being three deer that I was after this year. Two of them, the one went 207. That's a neighbor killed that Tyler and I had an encounter with. The other one that was really big. I'm not sure how big he was. I was guessing he was in the 240s. He was a really big deer. He was a really special deer. He was actually wasn't very far from where I shot my 230. He was just right there in the same area. So I saw the deer from the road. Long story short, I got permission from the landowner. I could tell nobody had been running cattle in this place for a long time because the grass was all overgrown. The fence was all on the ground. Nobody's ran cows in here forever. So I call, get permission. About 3 weeks later, I go hang cameras. I know this big deer's in there. So I go out there, go to hang cameras. I ended up bumping the deer. He got up like 10 yards in front of me in the grass. And I was like, holy cow, this thing. He's got two big drops on the right, one big drop on the left. And I mean, he's a monster. I was like, holy cow. It's like, I'm going to get you, Billy. I'm going to get you. So I hung three cell cameras in there that evening. Got home. And the guy that's her nephew that has surface rights, quote unquote surface rights, called me and he was pissed. He was like, I don't, you know, you can't be in there. I've got all the surface rights. And I was like, well, she gave me permission. You know, I had permission from the landowner to be there. And he threw this big fit, threatened to shoot me if he saw me there. And I'm like, okay, whatever. No deer's worth getting killed over because you're insane. So I went back out there that night and just pulled my cameras and got out of there. As much as it broke my heart, I mean, I had to do it. No, absolutely not. So that one was a big heartbreak. And then there was another one that he ended up going like 193, and he was just a clean 10 pointer. He had one little sticker off his brow. He was on public land, and I had been watching him for 2 or 3 weeks and just kind of knew his flight plan every night. There was one single tree on the fence line. I took my Elevate stand in there, hung it up that evening. I was like, I know what this deer does every single night. He hits this fence line, walks down it to the pond. Psh, here we go. Game over. It's about an hour before dark. Deer stands up about 500 yards away in the mile where his usual bed's at. I was like, wind's right. Here we go. Got this one in the bag. Sitting there, the deer walks about 100 yards. You know, he's just kind of taking his time. Up on the road, a truck pulls up, stops. I'm like, no, don't you stop. No, no. Two guys get out, put their blaze orange on. They both have muzzleloaders because it's muzzleloader season. Bow season open and muzzleloader season open on the same day. Grab their muzzleloaders, start walking their way out towards this deer. I said, no freaking way. You're kidding me. This is not happening right now. So they walk down the waterway. They get to about 200 yards of this deer. At this point, the deer's about 250, 300 yards away from me. They get about 200 yards away from this deer and blast him right in front of me. And there was nothing I could do about it. I had my bow and I was like, okay. I called the game warden up right away. It's like, we're going to check these guys out. So he rushed over there. Everything was legit. You know, they had just as much right to be there as I did. It was public land. I can't say anything about it. You know, can I be upset about it? Sure. But I'm not going to like cuss these guys out or whatever. You know, that fair and square, you guys got it done. And later on, they ended up telling me that he went like 193, I think, as a clean 10 pointer. So that's a really big deer.
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't imagine, man.
Yeah, so that was a pretty hard jab, and where I ended up killing my deer this year, Megatron. There was one he never would hit a trail camera, but I knew he was big. I knew he was really big. Several points. I had that encounter Tyler and I had with him, and then I had two more encounters with him where he was running a doe and just never would give me a shot. The neighbors to the east of me, some guys from Texas, have that leased up, and they ended up killing him. When Angel and I were in Texas, the Kansas rifle season was going, and they ended up shooting him with a gun at like 550 yards or something crazy, and he went 207.
What kind of firearm are you allowed to use in Kansas?
Any center fire rifle. So, heck, you can use a 5.56 now. You can, or a 223. You can use any center fire you can use. I don't know what they were shooting, but 550 yards is a pretty good poke, but I guess they got him. And my taxidermist actually ended up sending me the picture of the deer. He said, hey, man, this was killed out by you. And I was like, yeah, he was. He was killed across the road from me. I was hunting that, but I was already tagged out at that point. But I just, Ah, come on, man. So, but that's hunting. That's the way it goes. You know, it was a rough year, but I kind of humbled me a lot too, I guess you could say, because, you know, nothing is guaranteed. You know, a couple of times I was like, oh, I got this in the bag. And then the good Lord has other plans in store for you. So
no doubt. When you look at going back to what we were even saying earlier about maybe finding new ground, all that stuff, are there other properties that you want to try to maybe ask to for permission on? I mean, obviously you don't like, please don't like say which ones or anything like that, but is that going to be the main focus, or is it still like there's some public land and along those lines? Like what's your kind of game plan with that?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be, so my game plan is, you know, here in just about a month or so, I'm going to be looking at where all these guys, cause I've got connections now with all the farmers around here. I'm going to be looking at where these guys are going to be planting their milo fields now and getting a hold of them and say, hey, you know, this fall, if I see one out in your field, you know, do you care if I go shooting? Most of the time they're like, oh no, I don't care. You know, that's fine. He's out there bedding and knocking all my milo over and all this, that, and the other. So they usually don't care too much, but there is some really good public around that I'm going to be hitting pretty good too. It's just, you know, you cast out, what I always try to do is cast a really big net and pull it back in, you know, cast a really big net out there, run cameras in a lot of different places, you know, just to find a big one, or if you're scouting, find a big one, then try to hone in on him. But my door's completely open, you know. I'm going to hunt public. I still have the one farm where I've got some bucks I've got some history with, where my food plot's at, that I can hunt. So I'm going to really try to focus on that food plot this year, get it going for sure, and see if I can pull those bucks back in. Because I got some up-and-comers up there that should be really – I got one up there that's – we called him the Mega 10 last year, that he should be a really big deer this year. So
nice.
Hopefully he made it.
Let me ask you this, John. When you look at – the previous properties you own, like, or not own, but like that you had access to, and that maybe some other pieces that you're looking at in the future, all those things, what did you take away as far as like maximizing like what you had? Do you know what I mean? Like maximizing what you had and then knowing like, okay, this is really all I need. Do you know what I mean? Like when you look at a piece, like, man, if I just have this, I could work with that. Like you're able to maximize what you have. What are some of those features that kind of, you know, like, man, that's all I need to play with?
Yeah. So the main thing is going to be the food source. You know, if there's a milo field close, that's number one you're looking for. Number two is going to be a water source. If there's not a water source anywhere close to it, more likely they're not going to be there. So if you've got a good water source within a half, three quarters of a mile, you're probably in the game. Of course, number three is going to be bedding before that milo comes, you know, before it's right, because as soon as that milo is ready and they move into there, you don't need the bedding anymore. You only need the two things. You need the food source, you need the water source, and that's pretty much all you need. That's what I tell everybody to look for. That's when a lot of guys, you know, they want to hunt the creek bottoms, you know, the thick cover and stuff like that. And that's great during the rut, you know, where the does move there, that's where the bucks are going to move. You know, that's a pretty good game plan. But early season, when I like to try to, you know, season gets going, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. I don't care if it's 100 degrees. I'm out there. You know, I don't know. Heck, the two 200s I killed, it was over 90 degrees that day. So, you know, temperature doesn't really mean anything if they're the right place. I always say, if you've got a mature buck on camera, he is going to be on his feet at least 30 minutes before dark. This is just my own opinion. I don't believe there's a quote unquote completely nocturnal deer. I think that they're up and moving. They're just not moving where you're at.
Right.
So
they might only be moving within that little mini radius.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. You know, I think these bucks, when they get, the older they get, their home, their core kind of shrinks. But there's a deer I was hunting this year. I know he's old. I know he's 6 or 7 years old. I've got history with him, tons of pictures of him on this farm. Where I was hunting him at, he was always kind of borderline daylight, never quite there. So I knew he was traveling from somewhere. I actually ended up finding his shed here a couple weeks ago. And you want to guess how far away that shed was from where I was hunting him in that field?
No, dude, probably only yards.
4 miles.
Boy. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Oh, yards. You're like, yeah, 4 miles away.
Yeah. So when that food source went away and then the rut was over, he moved to where the green winter wheat was, where his winter food source was and his cover, his thermal cover, that's where he moved to. And it was literally 3.5 or 4 miles away. That's how far he had to travel to get back to there. It is, like I said, these old deer, I think their home course shrinks a little bit, but they roam so much out here. It's just kind of, it's hard. It gets hard to hone in on. I've got a guy that's a really good friend of mine. He kills big deer every year, and he was chasing one this year, and he had him in a field and had him honed in. And all of a sudden, you know, pictures, morning pictures, evening pictures, there all the time. All of a sudden, boom, gone. He found him 7 miles away in another Milo field. That deer moved 7 miles on him. For what reason? Don't know. He just decided one night to get up and move, and that's where he went.
Holy hell, man. So
he ended up killing the buck too.
Yeah, really? That's pretty neat. So yeah. What I know, like when we talked, and you please correct me if I'm wrong, that two of three of your big boys were early season, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so yep. So this year was my first year. Well, I shouldn't say my first, my second year hunting early season, early September in a warm state. I've done Maryland this past year. I did Delaware the year prior, 2 years prior. I can't remember. I can't recall. And this year, night one, it was like 98. It was up there. I think at one point it did break 100 degrees, and we worked. Oof. Yeah. We worked back to this corn. It was corn this year at this piece of property. And my buddy who goes every year, cause he was stationed down there for many years. And he said, man, when it's beans, we're golden. He goes, I'm pretty sure it was, you know, this year will be corn. And it was, we struggled, but at one point midday, he had a cool encounter with two bucks right in the middle of daylight. I mean, it was like, I'm just walking 2 miles back because in Maryland you have to sign in at a spot. And we were basically had to walk 2 miles back to this corner. I was kind of being, I don't know. I was looking in the shady part timber. It had a little couple ridges down by this water. And he went back to this corner and he got in it. And like, he found a lot of sign. And he was like, dude, you got to work your way here. And I was like, oh my God, I'm dying. That's another mile that I got to go. I was like, okay, I'll get there. And I got there that night. He had the cool encounter with the deer. I didn't see any deer that night. The next day, we hunted in the morning. I had a couple of deer blown at me, which I 100% positive were just doe. We moved spots. I had a really cool encounter with a 10 point. But prior to that 10 point encounter, John, it was warm. It was still in the 80s. And we saw that there was rain coming through and it was going to drop at least 20 degrees. And it was pouring. I was up in the saddle. Thunder and lightning. I was an idiot. I'm like, if I'm going down, at least whatever, I'll get struck here in the tree wearing my tethered saddle. Like, okay, let's let it rip. And it died down and I was on alert and I was fixated on a point where I thought this deer would be coming from, like through the cover where a trail was. There was a scrape behind me that was a desk size scrape, fresh. I'm like, man, this is dynamite. My wind's perfect. And the deer came from an opposite direction, too close. By the time I recognized it, because of all the foliage on the trees and everything like that, wow. just bust. Like by the time I saw him coming, I saw he had like that type of frame to him, like a gnarly finger looking thing. It was awesome. He was such a cool looking buck for the 7 seconds I got a chance to see him. And as he's coming, I'm reaching for my bow and like my right hand's getting ready to go to do like the weak side shot because that scrape was like 4 o'clock for me if I'm in the saddle. And I was like, dude, you got to hurry up and make this next move because he's still under some tree branches, but he had like a step and a half and then he would be in the clear. And that's when he was a little too quick for me. Like I said, I saw him too late and he just looked up, saw me and bolted away. So with that, like when a rainstorm hits, like this is a key thing that I want to ask you, because like I said, I know you love hunting those early seasons. Are you like, if you get that rainstorm and you know, it's obviously going to let off before shooting light and then you get that temp drop, man, like are those the times that you really like, or is there other things that kind of coincide with that?
Oh, that is to me is the killing time with any kind of front coming. Yeah. I mean, you can get a small rain cloud come in, you know, and like you said, if it drops 20 degrees or 30 degrees or something, you get that sudden drop. I don't care. They're going to get up. it's they're going to get, and they could get up, you know, if it doesn't get dark till 9 o'clock, if you've got a front like that coming through, they'll be on their feet hours before dark. I mean, that just for whatever reason just snaps them. It's like the night before I killed Zeus, we had that same little thing happen. It was literally just a little rain cloud that came over, dumped a bunch of rain, blocked the sun out for 30 minutes or whatever, cooled off, he'd get up on his feet. You know, it was just that. That's all it took for them to get up and get moving. And I didn't really take this into consideration. I can't remember if it was Jeff Klump that told me or who it was. But if you think about it, you know, an early season, put your heavy coat on. You know, it's 90 degrees. Put your heavy coat on. How much do you really want to move? Not much. You don't want to go walk, you know, a half mile or a mile. You don't want to do it with your heavy coat on. What do you think they want to do? Yeah, they do shed some of their hair. You know, they have their summer coats. So it's not as heavy, but it's still, maybe it's like us putting a hoodie on. Even at 90 degrees, I don't want to put a damn hoodie on. You know, I think that they're traveling. They're not going to travel as far. They're going to travel from bed to water to food or whatever. You know, I don't think it's going to be a very long ways. And I think that's the big key. You know, and I killed Zeus. I knew he was coming to my feeder at some point at night. You know, usually it was right after dark. It was like at 9:30, 10 o'clock. So, okay, he's not getting there till after dark. So he's on his feet moving somewhere. It can't be that far away. And that's when I ended up finding him, like, you know, 400 yards from there. That's where his bed was. And it was just a get in between from the time he gets up to where he's going to that main food source and get in between there.
Yeah.
When he's on his feet in daylight. That's the key.
Yeah, dude. Like, cause man, I've been a big proponent of rainstorms, like any type of front, obviously, like here, normal. And obviously I was putting two together of like, man, this could be good. Like I'm ready. Like I said, like once that rain, I mean, it was a pretty good storm that like came through that night because Albert and I, we had a duck under like a huge cover tree, and like it was pretty good. And once it died down, that's when we like almost sprinted. It was still kind of raining a little bit. We're like, all right, let's get to our spot. We bumped a deer and like, he said it was like a little kind of like a little basket, a little buck, he said, and like where it traveled, I was like, okay, it makes sense. Like it might've, I don't know. It basically caught us, but then like where it went, I was like, man, it might be coming up from over, like where I was set up and stuff like that. So I was fired up because we got that rain and it threw me for a loop because I knew we were going to get something, but I didn't realize we were going to get it that time frame. So like once it worked out the way it did, I was so fired up. And I was like, man, as we were talking about like that early season stuff, I'm like, I'm going to ask John that, because again, I know you really like that early season, especially in those hot low, like how you said, it gets really, really hot. Normally, if it's 90 degrees here in September, I can't hunt anyway here in the state of Pennsylvania. Like I would have to go to Maryland. I would have to go to these other states. So that was like a key aspect that I really wanted to ask you, like, does it still work for you? Cause I believe in it. I wanted to make sure that was something that you kind of, you know, also use.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I took some really good footage through my spotting scope this year too, searching for another big one, you know, in these mallow fields. And anytime, if I had any time after work to get there, okay, we're going to have a cloudy day. The temperature's going to fall. You know, I got to get out there because the deer are going to be up on their feet. And I got some really good footage of some good bucks. And now, like you said, having those little storms come in or that cloud cover or whatnot, it was huge. It was huge. I would see them up on their feet, you know, two and a half hours before dark.
Yeah. Man, that's crazy. So for me, I'm getting fired up, man. Like turkey season's around. Like you were saying earlier, Tyler and Angela love going turkey hunting. What's the population like where you're at for turkeys?
There's not many. it's really tough. Blake and I hit it hard, pretty hard this last youth season. And I feel like we saw three turkeys. So we don't have very many, but we do plan on going further east of us about an hour and a half this spring to because they got a pretty good population. You go, you know, over kind of towards Salina and stuff, they got a pretty good population. So we're going to hit some public over there, I think. And then we'll see how the spring goes. I'd really like to maybe hook up with, I know Angela's going to be going to Kentucky and Indiana So I might try to get with Angelo on a couple of those hunts. And if I got some time, I'm going to try to make those happen too. But I'm really excited about it. I mean, watching these guys, I talked to Josh Stubbs from Elevate quite a bit. And he was just, he's just down in Florida right now and ended up slamming two birds. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting me fired up. I'm ready. Like, all right, Josh, when are we going? Let me take the, I need the Turkey Master to go with me and let's go get me a bird, man. I think it'd be pretty cool.
Dude, I fell back in love with it. I hunted turkey as a young kid all the time with my dad. It's one of my dad's passions. And this past year, I fell back in love with it. And I'm excited to go again this year, whether I kill one or not. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm hoping that I can. It was a shit ton of more fun the last, you know, a couple of years than just going out calling and hearing them and, you know, coming home with my tail between my legs. But yeah, coming home with a bird on my back is a lot better. How was filming this past year for you? Because I know you guys were doing a lot of things with your Legacy Pursuit. What, you know, how was the filming aspect? Fun, challenging, annoying? What was that like?
All the above. It was a little bit of all of the above. It was, you know, from splitting off and doing our own thing, we kind of knew going into, we all had this conversation from the get-go. It got to, before we split off and did Legacy Pursuit, it got to where it was almost a job and it's like, you had to do this and you had to do that and this. And we kind of wanted to get back to just what hunting meant to us and our families. If we get everything on film, great. If we don't, screw it. You know, you know, we're going to share our journey along the way. You know, we do have a couple of videos out on YouTube and, you know, our Instagram, we try to really keep up with it, stay interactive with people. But it's like even my deer this year, I didn't get him on film. You know, it just didn't play out. The snow was really falling really hard. I was like, I'm not taking my expensive camera out here because I still don't have a cover for it like an idiot. So I didn't do that. I did have my GoPro with me and just, you know, I wasn't filming with my phone at the time. And when I finally got a chance at this buck that I'd been hunting, you know, one of the two bucks, I finally got the opportunity. I said, I'm not going to let it slip through my fingers. I've worked too hard for this. So I shot him. And I did have my GoPro on my head, but unbeknownst to me, I had it turned too far down. And all you can see is like the bottom cam of my bow and stuff when I draw back and you can hear the shot. That's it. I'm like, whatever. I don't care. You know, and Angelo, he got some stuff on film though. He got some of his doe kills on film. So Angelo did a pretty good job, better than Tyler and I did. But like I said, it was just a, let's get back to our roots, what it means to us. Let's share a little bit of our journey along the way. But this year, this season, it's going to be a little different. We're going to be a little harder after it this year, as far as trying to get things on film. Like I told the guys too, I said, if it's in the moment, you don't hit record or whatever it is, if it happens quick, you don't get it. You know, it's real life. You know, anybody that's ever self-filmed knows how much of a pain in the ass it is to haul all your stuff around, trying to get three or four different angles, get everything set up. I mean, it is. It's hard. You know, before getting into it, I had no idea how hard self-filming was. And if you have a guy there to film you, it's a heck of a lot easier. The only thing you have to do is focus on shooting the deer. I mean, that's gravy. But when you're by yourself, it's a whole different. And we could possibly have another member or two this year on the team. We don't know for sure yet. And hopefully we'll be able to kind of cover some of those gaps, you know, some guys that are close to us that we can get like, hey man, you know, I got a big one showing up. Get your butt down here. Let's get him killed. You know, that'll make it a lot easier. So, and then now Blake is a little bit older. I think Blake's going to be able to do a little more filming of me this year. I'm kind of going to let go of the reins a little bit. He knows what to do. I don't have to sit there. Okay, here he is in the scope. You know, he's kind of got it down now. And I don't have to worry as much. I don't think of him getting on the deer. I'm going to focus more on, I'm going to get this, capture this memory for him, get it on video and, you know, let go of the reins a little bit. And if he ends up missing or whatever, then I guess that's just the way it is.
That's the way it is, know? Man. Right? So, that's hunting. Welcome to the big leagues, buddy.
Exactly. No. We always say that you know, by the time Blake's 12 now, so by the time he's 16, he's probably going to be a self-filming killer. So
yeah, that's cool.
Which would be great.
That would be great. Yeah. Dude, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, even before I started the podcast that fall before, so I mean, we're talking five hunting, the past five hunting seasons, I've been on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. I've sit there and I said what you said. I'm making sure next year I'm doing it. And then it's like one hiccup, one pain in the ass thing of carrying everything pissed me off or something. And I was like, I'm done. I'm just going to go with a GoPro or a 360 camera. And this year I finally got one of the kills on camera. And it was my first time doing it. And dude, it was really cool. And man, I do see the benefits. I've talked about it before where you could go back, see where you, you know, in your mind you think you hit, but where you actually hit is two different things sometimes that are obviously, you know, and along those lines. And, I'm with you on it. I, this past year, I did enjoy it a little bit more. I didn't put quote unquote pressure on myself with it.
Yeah, absolutely is. Yeah, I love it. You know, the year before killing that, I killed that 180, and then, you know, being able to film Blake kill his deer, we got several does on film. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, this is awesome. And then this last year kind of kicked our asses, but like I said, I think we're gonna get back into it. You know, we're gonna get a drone. You know, get some of those really good drone shots and stuff. And I think the quality of our content is going to be a lot better this year too, as far as editing, stuff like that. Cause as you know, editing, that takes, you think, oh man, I got Adobe Pro, I can get on there. No, it's not that easy. It is not. It takes a lot of time, a lot of practice, a lot of hours to really get that perfect video. And that's where we're at this next year. I think I'm going to do a couple of workshops, kind of get some tips from some guys. But editing, I think this next year is going to be a lot better as far as quality and everything.
Nice. I'll do a shameless plug for Byron Horton. Byron was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, but Byron also does a class as well. I think through Patreon. I think it's, I don't know. It was originally $50, but I think it's gone up, and I know he does certain things with that. So man, Byron's been doing it for a long time, does some great things, dubs it down too, really easily. So especially for people like you and I that are like, hey, we know a little bit, but we want to get better. It's definitely reach out to Byron. Byron's a good dude, good person. So, yeah, John, dude, I like this conversation. This was a fun one, man. I always enjoy catching up with you. I appreciate you, playing cat and mouse as far as getting our schedules lined up for this one. And between both of us with work and daughters and birthdays and all that, hell breaks loose. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be on spring break, I'll have plenty of time. And next thing you know, it's obviously my wife's birthday, my daughter's birthday, people doing this. And then, oh my gosh, it was just crazy. Yep. So I appreciate you, man. Where could people follow along, find you and all that jazz?
So you can get us on Legacy Pursuit on YouTube or Legacy Pursuit on Instagram. We do have a Facebook page. It's not really not that big. Legacy Pursuit on Instagram is pretty much probably the biggest place to find us. So, or you can find us a lot on our some of our sponsors like Elevate Stand Company, Water Feather Boats. You can find us there too. So
nice. And then what? Any future things that you would like to maybe potentially hint at? I mean, we've got a glimpse of it on social media.
Yeah, like I said, the podcast is going to be up and going here real soon. We're still playing around with that. We want to get that quality, you know, that really good quality. So we're playing around with that a little bit. I'm going to guess here in the next couple of weeks, you'll see something pop up on the podcast side of things. Like I said, our YouTube channel, we're really going to get it vamped up this year too. So be looking out for that.
Awesome, dude. Well, I appreciate it, John. Make sure you guys go follow to check out John and his crew, and obviously with Legacy Pursuit. So thanks again, everybody, for checking in and checking this one out. See you next week. Antler up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.